50 years ago this week, President Nixon signed into law the National Cancer Act. The goal? Invest in medical research with the hope of finding a cure for cancer in just 5 years.
And I hope that in the years ahead, that we may look back on this day and this action as being the most significant action taken during this administration.
Of course, there is still no cure for cancer, but where has that war on cancer led us? Joining us now is Otis Brawley, former chief medical officer for the American Cancer Society and currently a professor of oncology and epidemiology at Johns Hopkins University. Doctor, welcome to the show.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Let's remind people, 50 years ago, half of all Americans diagnosed with cancer died from it. People were scared to talk about it. I mean, we have come a long way.
We actually have. It was called the Big C. Some people couldn't even say the name of the disease, and it was incredibly feared. And it still does hurt a large number of people, but we have made significant progress. We've had a 31% decline in the relative risk of death since 1991, much of it attributed to the National Cancer Act.
At the same time, cancer historian Judith Pearson, for example, writes that Nixon's war on cancer is a magnificently fruitful failure because while there's so many advances, as you're talking about in research and treatment, there is still no cure. How do you see it?
I see cancer as a number of different diseases, perhaps 200 different diseases. Some of the advances that we've made through the National Cancer Act have developed additional treatments. Some have developed additional screening. Perhaps the most important thing to come out of the National Cancer Act is an understanding of what cancer is and what causes cancer. And that leads us to the ability to prevent a lot of cancers. You know, I now know that we can prevent at least 50% of all cancers, going beyond smoking, which was known to be a cause of cancer when Nixon signed the National Cancer Act. We now know that about 30% of cancers are due to energy imbalance, obesity, not enough exercise, and consuming too many calories, for example. We know about viruses in cancer, the HPV vaccination, which has the potential of preventing many head and neck cancers and cervical cancers. The thing that I like to stress is what we can do in the field of prevention or risk reduction. It's not just screening and treatment, although screening and treatment
right.
so much of the airway.
To your point here, Dr. Devra Davis, back in 2007, wrote a book called The Secret History of the War on Cancer, and she argued that we're fighting the wrong war by focusing on treatment and leaving out things that cause it, like tobacco and alcohol and our environment. Where are we on prevention?
You know, we have learned so much about what causes cancer and so much about how to reduce risk for cancer. But unfortunately, people don't really want to grasp it. You know, you hear a great deal about how great prevention is, but actually practicing prevention, getting into studying how you motivate society to do the right thing. Unfortunately, that's the downfall. And I must tell you, what came out of the National Cancer Act over the last 50 years is just amazing molecular biology, just amazing understanding of what cancer is. Total redefinition of what cancer is. You know, what we thought cancer was in 1960 and what we think it is in 2021 is totally different. And much of that actually does lead back to that prevention thing as being the low-hanging fruit, the opportunity that needs to be exploited.
But on this topic of prevention, do you feel that the medical industry has gone far enough with educating people on prevention methods?
You know, I do not feel the medical industry has gone far enough. I frequently say that the way to prevent cancer is to improve the education that's provided to people in second and third grade. We need to teach people ways of living a healthy life. That involves consumption of 5 to 9 servings of fruits and vegetables per day. That involves exercise, 30 minutes of good exercise at least 5 times a week for adults, and even more than that for children. Of course, not smoking as well. including not using e-cigarettes and marijuana. These things that I'm talking about, these health promotion things, prevent cancer. They also prevent the other chronic diseases like cardiovascular disease, diabetes, and even orthopedic injury. So we really do need the stress prevention. One of the problems is, how do you make money off of prevention? And when I say make money off of prevention, I mean, how does one make a living off of it? And by the way, prevention is not taking vitamins or taking supplements or something like that. It's simply a good balanced diet with exercise and avoiding well-known carcinogens.
This intersects with another big issue when we talk about the war on cancer, and that's disparities. Black people have higher death rates than all other racial groups in the U.S. for many cancers, including breast and prostate cancer. There are so many contributing factors here: poverty, access to medical care, differences in treatment, education about a healthy diet. Are we doing everything we can to improve that?
Well, you know, the most recent data really is striking about that. For example, if we look at breast cancer, there are five states in the United States where Black-white breast cancer death rates are the same. That indicates that we can do a great deal more for breast cancer for Black women. American Cancer Society epidemiologists actually suggest that if we get everything that we currently know people should get, from prevention all the way, or risk reduction all the way through appropriate screening and appropriate treatment, 130,000 of the 600,000 cancer deaths that are going to occur this year would not occur. And by the way, 80,000 of that 130,000 deaths are in white Americans. So when we talk about health disparities, a Black or poor person or Hispanic person in the United States is more likely to suffer from those health disparities, but the largest group to suffer from health disparities are white Americans.
And you know, over the last 50 years, there have been many initiatives. Back in 2016, President Obama called on then Vice President Biden to lead what he called a cancer moonshot to eliminate cancer. Let's listen.
I believe that the United States of America should be the country that ends cancer once and for all. We're already closer than a lot of folks think, and this bill will bring us even closer, investing in promising new therapies, developing vaccines, and improving cancer detection and prevention.
How will we look back on that moment at its 50-year anniversary?
Well, in many respects, what came out of the National Cancer Act that many people don't totally appreciate is a momentum that developed new knowledge about what cancer is, as well as training of a large force of people, primarily in molecular biology and cellular biology. That has led to a number of people in the biotech industry. You know, the biotech industry blossomed because of the National Cancer Act. Today, more research is done by private companies than done by the U.S. government funded through universities. I happen to think that we've learned a great deal and we can apply a great deal more, but implementation science is something we also need to think about. Implementation science is, how do we get the fruits of what we're developing to all the people? But I'm very optimistic. You know, one thing I should point out is the death rate from colorectal cancer today is literally 50% of what it was in 1981. Your average American, the risk of dying from colon cancer is half what it was 40 years ago. The death rate for women in the United States from breast cancer is 40% of what it was in 1990. And so we are making some progress, and it really ought to give us a little bit more encouragement that we can make more progress. By the way, I do worry about the research efforts. You know, 10% of grants going to the National Institutes of Health that are judged worthy of funding are actually getting funded right now. We have a lot of research ideas that are really good, but they don't get funded. So I do worry about the future.
Well, what do you see the priority to be over the next 50 years?
I think over the next 50 years, or I hope, I should say, that we will focus more and more on risk reduction. It's also doing such things as breastfeeding. For example, we've got data to show that women who have children and don't breastfeed increase their risk of some of the bad types of breast cancer. Indeed, this is part of the reason why Black women have a higher risk of triple negative, more aggressive breast cancer. It's really poor women who tend not to breastfeed. So I'm hoping that we can focus more on the things that we can do to live a healthy life.
Otis Brawley is former chief medical officer of the American Cancer Society and professor at Johns Hopkins University. Thank you so much for this conversation.
Oh, it's my privilege.